Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com with your hosts, Maureen Hollering, Steve Frampton, Brenda McCoy, and Bobby Marcheso. During the second half of the show, call in to connect for a free psychic reading. Join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Steve Frampton, and you're listening to the Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In just a moment, Gail St. John will be joining us. Gail is a renowned psychic and medium, specializing in the recovery of people that have been lost, and also, sadly, in the recovery of human remains. She does exceptional work, and I'll be introducing Gail in just a moment. Before we get started, I want to wish Maureen the good recovery. I know that she's not feeling very well this evening, so she's not with us. So please do send your healing thoughts to Maureen. We hope you get better soon, Maureen. And I would like to welcome Brenda. How are you, Brenda?
I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to this show. This is so fascinating, and it's such a great way to use your psychic skills. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yes. I mean, Gail does amazing work, and she's...
such a gift.
Absolutely fascinating to talk to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's going to be talking to us about some pretty well-known or very well-known cases.
Wow.
So it'll be very, very insightful. Well, Brenda, could you tell us a little about your work?
Well, I work at Psychic Access with the rest of you lovely people and PsychicAccess.com, and I'm a predictive psychic. I specialize in dates, times, and places, and I mainly use the tarot and the crystal ball. I'm like you, Steve, I'm interested in everything in the area of metaphysics.
Absolutely. There's a lot to discover.
I know, endless.
Endless, it really is. It's a journey of many lifetimes, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's enough time in one life to learn it all.
There isn't.
Well, thank you for being with us, Brenda. And looking forward to our discussion later. Bobby, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Very well, thank you. How was your week?
It was a good week. I actually spent Sunday with Brenda, and we had a very good time. And overall, it was kind of a busy week, but really, really fun.
Good. Well, Bobby, could you share with our listeners a little about your work?
Psychic medium. Styles of usually in front of an audience and doing workshop types where people ask questions and guidance, and we try to answer those from the other side. The information comes from different places, of course. I think spirit guides, family, loved ones, universal type spirits, just depending on what it is that you particularly believe in. But and then of course talking to loved ones on the other side as well, just like yourself. Not talking to you on the other side, just like you talk to other people. I didn't need to explain that, did I? No.
Well, it's always good to have you on the show, Bobby.
Thanks, man.
Okay, well, I'll introduce Gail. Gail was born in Toledo, Ohio, and she describes herself as originally a somewhat shy woman. She was raised in a psychic family with her mother and maternal grandparents, practicing psychic and spiritual beliefs. So she has... an upbringing that really revolved around metaphysics and spirituality. She's been recently featured on Gerald Rivera's At Large, on Larry King Live, CNN's Nancy Grace and Psychic Detectives, Court TV, Fateful Friendship, and she is very active as a psychic detective. She spends a lot of time working on murder and missing persons cases. I know that she has an enormous amount of integrity and connection with spirit. Well, Gail, welcome. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, I'm so happy to be here. I'm really excited. I just keep feeling a lot of energy around you and the show and what's happening. So I'm ready to get right into it.
Well, it's wonderful. It's great to have you here, Brenda. I'm hoping that we'll stump the Larry King live show and CNN. Well, it's just great to have you here, Gail, because I had a conversation with you some time ago about your work, and I was just absolutely fascinated by the work that you do. But I want to start, Gail, by asking you a little about your childhood, your upbringing, and how your connection with the spirit world began.
Okay. Well, I got to say, it really began that I remember around age 4, which was probably the worst way that you'd want to start out your, so to speak, abilities, by seeing your neighbor's house on fire. And I was out playing with a group of kids. So, you know, you're in the 4-year-old mindset, so I think most people out here understand what a 4-year-old mindset is. And then you look up from, you know, giggling and laughing and all the cutesy stuff with your little girlfriends, and you see the house on fire, and then all of a sudden it's not on fire. Let me tell you, a 4-year-old brain does not comprehend that. And
that's scary for a kid.
Go ahead.
That's scary for a kid.
It is. I ran screaming. And, you know, and the other kids couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. You know, sorry, I didn't know what was wrong with me. And I ran to the house and ran in screaming, and my grandmother was over, and she kept saying, "Calm down, calm down. What are you saying? What are you saying?" I was almost 5 years old. And I said, the house is burning. She goes, "What's burning? Whose house is burning?" I went, "No, it's not burning. I mean, it is burning." I was so confused. And she looked at my mom. She goes, "Uh-oh." She goes, "Okay, now calmly tell us what happened." I looked up. I was playing with my friend Julie. I looked up, and the neighbor's house was burning. And then I shut my eyes quickly to look again, and it wasn't burning. And it was one of those moments where my mom and my grandma looked at each other and said, "We need to speak. We really need to have a conversation. This is, you know, this is time to sit down and say, listen, you may have an ability that's been passed on through the family, and you're not allowed to talk about this." And I had a personality as a kid. If you'd said, you know, no, I said yes. So, of course, telling me I couldn't talk about things was just like the worst thing to ever say to me. And while I'm still trying to deal with this house burning and this whole thing, I'm going, so am I looking at what? And they said, well, we don't know, you know, exactly, but this is an ability, so something may be happening. Well, it did. A few days later, their house caught fire. So that really kind of set me in the direction of saying, if I could have said something, if, could I have prevented some of this? Could I have changed, or could I have helped change some of the outcome? Could I have prevented something? Well, that bothered me. I was one of those little kids that was terribly bothered by that. And that set me on my life course, as you can see.
It's been a fascinating life course. Were both your mother and your grandmother mediums then, Gail?
Yes, and my grandfather as well.
Wow, wonderful. And you were raised as a spiritualist, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yes, I was raised as a spiritualist.
So could you share with our listeners some information about spiritualism and spiritualist beliefs?
Well, I pretty much think everybody knows that it's practiced within the church. Readings on the podium, yes, we have our normal sermons and that, and we all usually have a healing session throughout the course of the sermon and so on. But then you actually had the readings from the podium, which I think is strange for most people who have not grown up in this religion or way of life, as we call it. So that was normal, and I think I didn't really realize it until I started experimenting as I got away from the spiritualist church and experimented into others, because I was your typical teenager, too. I had to experiment. I didn't realize it so much that other religions didn't practice this type of thing, and these beliefs within the church that you can communicate with those that have passed. So I was reading on the podium right around 8, 9 years old, and I was one of the youngest at the church. Guess it didn't really hit me until I got much older. But these beliefs are so strong, you know, within the church and this way of life. And my grandfather really hates calling it a religion. It's a way of life. But I think that's some of the big differences between that religion and other religions.
Yes, I do agree with you that it is a way of life. It's a choice to commit to serving spirit.
Right, right, absolutely. And then, and you know, when you go to other churches, you don't, that obviously that's not happening up there on the podium. So,
well, I'm interested to ask you, Gail, how you progressed from that beginning with spiritualism and your ability to the point at which you decided to train your own dogs to actually locate human remains.
Oh, Steve, such a long path, really. I mean, it doesn't seem like it sometimes, but I look back at the road, I think, wow, how did I get here? I kind of, I can't say I wasn't a typical teenager. I had my rebellious stage, and one was a rebellious in this way of life, okay? So I looked away for a while. Now, you yourself and others may understand this, but there's some people who don't understand. When you look away, sometimes things slap you in the face a little harder.
Yes.
And it's a very hard lesson to, I don't even want to say swallow, boy, you got to eat some of these lessons. And it just kept over and over and over. It's like, Gail, get the message. Well, I think my final turnaround, because I was doing readings all through my teenage life, on a professional level, I was giving readings. I had a regular client base, everything. I hit, I think it was about eight years old. I'll jump back a little bit to when I saw a missing person on TV. I was local. And I just turned around. And it was so casual. I remember the way I said it. That's what I'm going to do with my life. And she just went, oh, okay. I was like, all right. But I don't know that I took it serious when I said it, in the sense of I knew kind of where I wanted to go, but I didn't know how or where that road would lead me. At 15 years old, my parents had rental property. They had rented their home out to this family, and then they lived there for about 3-4 years. We moved in. I was in high school, and apparently I was in the bedroom of this one boy. We'll go with his first name was Kevin, and he disappeared. Well, I heard it circulated around school. You know, kids talk. Nobody really knew what happened. I went home and was sitting in my room doing homework, just doing normal stuff, and I kept seeing vivid pictures. I said, stop, 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 stop. I don't want to see this. I don't want to see this. And more pictures and graphic pictures. Then I went to sleep that night, more graphic pictures. Didn't get any sleep. Went to school. What's the first thing my friend says when I meet her at the bus stop? Hey, have you heard anything more about Kevin and him being missing? Because, you know, you live in the house. I went, yeah, my parents own it. They said, have you heard anything? I said, why would I hear anything? I'm trying to avoid this whole subject. And it's like everywhere I went, everybody was saying the words. I'm like, oh, I don't want to see anymore. Well, I think it was about 5 or 6 days later, they found him. And, of course, he had been murdered, or at least they suspected murder. I didn't know a whole lot about it, but, you know, then it comes out in the local papers, and I'm looking at the picture, I'm going, oh, my God, that's the exact pictures I saw. That's where he was found. And within that dreamlike state I was in, I could feel the killer watching me. I was so scared. It was like I was standing right there, and they knew I was there. I was so frightened by this. I didn't know quite how to take that or how to work around this. So I think at that point it really set me on the course of saying, I see where they are. Nothing's 100% in this world, but if I can help, then I need to do this. So I continued on down this road. When called by police or families, helping them to give them, you know, some understanding of where their loved one is. And if and when I could, I would actually go out and look. And I found, you know, bodies on my own. But one day I was thinking, you know, what if I added tools to this? You know, you're a plumber. You don't go out with every tool you can have, right? What's the next tool? Dogs. Good idea. And thus you have what I'm doing today, putting my abilities in and training dogs, which they call for HRD, which human remains detection. And we spend a lot of time training, traveling back and forth, Homeland Security, and getting more training, training where I live. It's 7 days a week I'm training.
So where do you live in? So you're traveling from your home to Homeland Security to train the dogs.
About 4 hours away from there, okay. And I do that every couple weeks.
Wow.
And then the rest of the time I have a trainer. I travel to another training area, which is about an hour and 20 minutes from me. I train there twice a week, and then I train on my own at home the rest of the time.
Well, you're incredible, Gail. I'm interested to ask you, how many inquiries do you get in a month about missing persons?
You know, it varies from month to month. I don't mean any disrespect, but I call the month of murder May, because it seems like May I get swamped with murders. And but I would say I at least get 1 to 2 a day.
Gosh,
which doesn't sound like a lot. But I am to a point, Steve, where I have to do a little more investigating on a case where I'll say, okay, this person is missing, and this person is, you know, called me and wants me to find them. This case will resolve in the next 2 to 3 weeks. There's no point in me getting involved.
Okay.
And then there's some where I'll say this person's missing because they want to be. I'm not getting involved in that. And then I come across the case. I go, uh-oh, no, they're not missing because they want to be. And this is not going to be resolved in the next few weeks. They're going to run into a roadblock. And those are the ones that I end up taking on.
And could you share with us, Gail, how you became involved in the case in Florida with that poor little girl, Kaylee Anthony?
Oh, yes. That's so sad. A friend of mine had asked me to do a radio show with him concerning the case. I really didn't know much about the case. I don't like to know a lot about a case at all when I, you know, first start out on a case. And he began talking, and all of a sudden I said, I got to interrupt you, Brian. I'm sorry. And this is my opinion. Okay, so I'll put it out there. This is my opinion that the mother did it. Okay? And I don't feel it was an accident. There again, that's my opinion. So, you know, I get nasty emails from people, but we're all allowed to have an opinion. And my feeling was this was done so intentional that it really upset me. And I began getting emails after I did the radio show saying, please, please, we're concerned citizens that live here in the area. Can you please come with your dogs? So I got another trainer who also had a human remains detection dog, and one of my students went along, and my daughter. And I think for the people that haven't seen the video that was done, what I call the blind drive that I do on every case when I go there, is out on my website under breaking news. You can see the Kaylee Anthony video where we videotaped, landed right there, pointed out where her body was, could not get permission to search. That's key. I can't legally go on someone's property without permission. So there's a stumbling block we run into. We could not get permission to search. I asked police. We have recorded phone calls to please come out. Their response was not nice, and they refused to come out. Thus, she was found there. I videotaped that, and it's dated August 11th, and they found her December 11th. How much forensic evidence do you think was lost within that period of August 11th to December 11th? And I'm pretty sure everyone out here listening can figure out that we had a hurricane come through. There was lots of rain. There was all kinds of things. A lot of forensic evidence was destroyed. Bodies decompose way faster in water than in normal conditions. So add that up. In the video, you'll see me pointing out that that area was knee-deep in water, and we could see the bag floating. But there was nothing we could do legally.
That's so sad.
We would have been arrested.
So the police just said that they weren't prepared to come and look.
No, they would not. And if we'd have done it, one, we could have destroyed forensic evidence going in knee-deep water like that. I wanted police to come get us permission to get on the property and search. That way we had, forensic experts there and very careful that we would not destroy anything. Even though I've been through forensic classes and done things, it's always best to have a police officer there and get proper permissions and do all those things. We discussed it. We knew that we would be arrested for destruction of forensic evidence should we find her there. We made three different calls and could not get permission to search.
That's so sad.
It is, so, because I looked at, would it have changed the outcome? The day I did that radio show with Brian, Brian asked me, said, if it's she's guilty, like you're saying, is there going to end up being a court case? I said it's going to go to court, and she's going to walk. And Brian, you can hear him slam his hand down the desk. He goes, "No way!" I went, "She's going to walk." And sure enough, we all know what happened. I got called in for depositions, and did the depositions and everything, but she walked free.
It's a very, very tragic sad case.
Mm-hmm.
Very tragic case. So, Gail, I'm interested to know, how do you cope yourself just emotionally? You know, you're out and you sometimes do discover yourself human remains, and being involved in these really traumatic cases must take a toll on you. What do you do to manage your sensitivity, to ground yourself?
Well, I got to say, whenever I found a body, Steve, I'll tell you exactly the process of what happens. Your mind goes into a shutdown. After you realize it's the shell of a person, that they're no longer there, not suffering. But there's still a mental thing that bothers you a great deal, especially if you see how they were killed. There's been cases where I've come across someone who's decapitated a child. These are all upsetting things, very upsetting things. You will not see me for 3 days. I sleep almost 3 days solid. I just don't get out of bed. It's my mind, and I let it go. It's my mind working through things. It needs to sleep and needs to work through things on its own.
So do you literally sleep for 3 days solid, or do you stay in bed and rest?
I sleep pretty much. It's like get up, use the restroom, maybe get something to eat and drink, and straight back to sleep. The mind is healing.
Yeah, we do heal when we're sleeping.
Mm-hmm. And all I can do is accept what my body is saying it needs me to do. But there's never an easy time when you find someone that you know suffered, and this is why I teach now. I teach this to beginning students as well as to advanced that want to get into this type of work, because it's not... I came through this and had to learn everything on my own, and I now work with students and teaching them how to work with police, how these things work, how to do this differently, how to handle things, and bring them through it so they're not spending the years of trial and error like I've had to do.
Well, it's incredible, Gail, and you've solved so many cases, and it's really exciting to know that you're teaching other people, other gifted people, to do the same. And you know, if they can go forward and do the same work, then the number of people you'll have helped just multiplies. And how many cases do you feel that you've worked on?
That I've worked on? I couldn't even count. Hundreds I've worked on? Hundreds. Sometimes I can't go on the search. Sometimes I'm not able. I can't split myself in half. And sometimes financially I can't afford to go on the search. But hundreds and hundreds. I know Brian and I have a database of just hundreds of cases that we've worked on and given information on.
And are you normally approached by the police or by security services?
It's generally about 50-50. And normally, if the family contacts me, I tell the family, you have to, get with the detective on the case and let them know that I'm involved and kind of get their okay with this, because I'm going to want to work on things with them. They may want to brief me on information that's possibly confidential. And so I walk a fine line. I can't let confidential information out either if it's been given to me. If, you know, they brief me, I'm working as myself with a dog as well as psychic. So it's kind of a weird line. You know what I'm saying?
It's complicated. It is, for sure. I'm interested to ask you about the dog scale, because I love animals. Do you have to treat the dogs as in a different way than one would treat pets? Are you able to have them as pets as well, or do you have to keep that relationship different?
Well, they are pets, but it is a different kind of pet relationship. I have to say it that way. I had a shepherd that I had imported in many, many years ago from Czechoslovakia. He has since passed. I now have two border collies. I switched breeds. I had a difficult time after his passing dealing with it, and decided to switch breeds, and really love the working ethics of the border collies. And I got these dogs here are strictly from working stock. So, you know, it doesn't mean you can't get a good dog from the dog pound. If they have the right drive, this is what makes a good dog. So it doesn't matter about the breed, it has to have the right drive. I just went to a breeder and got border collies because of the work ethics. And when I have these dogs at home, we are very focused. I mean, they play like normal dogs, but we're very focused on if I say something, you know, and we work obedience. I use that even during their play routines, their obedience, And then they know we go outside for drive work. So it's a little different relationship as a pet, because
yes.
There has to be that constant behavior thing going on.
So are they the same dogs that are used for herding sheep, the collies?
Yes, border collies, yep.
Border collies. They're such intelligent dogs.
Yeah, originated in Scotland.
Yeah, they're wonderful dogs. I would love a dog like that. Well, my colleague Brenda has a question for you, Gail. So go ahead, Brenda.
Well, you know, I was wondering, because people see, they have really high hopes when they contact a psychic in regards to, you know, if they have a missing family member or child. And being a psychic myself, I know that, you know, we see certain things, and it's really hard to break the news when we see that, you know, they have high hopes, but we absolutely, you know, without a doubt, we know that that child's, you know, passed over or dead or something like that. How do you deal with something like that? How do you tell them? What's your...
Well,
your...
it's very delicate, but
it's extremely delicate,
it.
Yeah.
I mean, I sat there, and if you see one of the shows I did called A Fateful Friendship, which was psychic detectives on, at the time it was called Court TV, which is now True TV, you see me in there explaining to the father. He came to me because his daughter's been missing for 3 to 5 days, and I just looked at him, I reached out and grabbed his hand and said, I have to say this to you. She has passed. She's standing here next to me. She's talking.
Oh, wow.
I know that you need to deal with this, but we also have another issue at hand. And through his tears, he fought back and said, who did this? How do we move forward? Help me. And I said, your daughter's right here. Stacy's right here. And then we have a couple things going on. I said, one, her roommate's going to die.
Oh, wow.
And he looked at me and he says, I need to get the detective right away, don't I? I went, you need to get the detective immediately. So, and this is what I ended up on Larry King for, being shown as the first psychic detective that ever prevented a murder.
Wow, that's amazing. What happened?
So, well, the roommate...
Inquiring minds
want
to know.
Yeah, the roommate was going to go on a date with the guy that just killed her.
Oh, jeez.
And, of course, he admitted later he was going to kill her, too.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Well,
so,
thank you.
You know, it is a difficult thing to tell the family, but if you're looking at it from the situation of what happened in that case, and all cases are different, what choice did I have but to say, listen, your daughter's crossed over, we have to stop her roommate, who was her best friend, from having the same fate.
Wow, that is just amazing. That's impressive. That's the power of the psychic energy right there.
It is. It is. And not all cases go. And there's some cases, you know yourself as psychic, sometimes you just don't get any information.
Yes.
You know, I have made it my life duty to tell people, I'm sorry, I'm not receiving anything. I'm not going to tell you something I don't get. We need some honesty in this work as well.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. That answered
my
question.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you, Brenda. Thank you, Gail. We're going to take a short break, Gail, so we'll be just gone for 1 minute, and then we'll get back to our amazing... a very interesting discussion.
Thank you.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone.
Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
Foreign pathogens.
Well, welcome back, Gail. I wanted to ask you a little bit more, Gail, about what's required to actually do this kind of work. I know that you've had very extensive training and you've got enormous commitment to your work. How do you go about teaching other people, and what do you look for when you're selecting a person to train?
Well, the first thing I look for is, like anything that someone's going into, their ability. Obviously, I can't do anything with you if you don't have an ability or an aptitude towards this. And there are people out there who are wonderful, wonderful advisors. And I say this, God love them, because I go to advisors. So, you know, there's times when I just need that other look from someone else, hard to see for myself. But that doesn't mean they all can work on missing persons. So some people just, you know, naturally have certain abilities. And I look for that student that has that natural ability. And I only do like 1 to 2 apprentices every couple years because it's so extensive. And I've had a couple drop out because they say, wow, there's just too much to this. And then there's some that are just phenomenal. And I work with them in explaining how to work with police. I take them out in the field with me and teach them live when we're out there working. And I help them hone more of their skills to do this, as well as tell them, listen, these are the courses you're going to need. Not just being able to walk around and feel where someone is. You need to take courses like bloodborne pathogens and understand that. And, you know, because there's ways you could get hurt and sick out here. You have to have wide area searching, compass and mapping. You know, sometimes you get out in 200 acres, it's quite easy to get lost. You know, and
it could be, I should imagine it. I mean, it has its risks as well, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you better be prepared. And I tell people, if we get out in a situation, we're on 200, 300, 400 acres of woods, we could get lost. Do you have any understanding of how to survive yourself? Or are you going to be the next person that's gone missing? So you have to learn some survival skills as well. So this isn't just all about, I think I'm going to go traipse across the country. I was in Texas searching. We had rattlesnakes and other wildlife hazards. We had other wildlife hazards in Arizona when I was searching the dry riverbeds. You know, the nice little kitty cats like to come out and eat you in the evening. There's a lot of hazards in Florida. So you have to learn what your hazards are. Be prepared. Know what it is. Now, in what I'm involved with, I have to have medical training. So I've gone to school for EMT. With me in my backpack, you'll always find certain medical equipment, but I also know how to survive in the wild as well. If I was lost for days and days, I would survive.
You're just amazing, Gail. I'm absolutely entranced.
These are things that, and you, I mean, honestly, Steve, you get lost and die.
Yeah, I'm not very street smart, so I'd need a lot of training.
Well, it, you know, those is out in the woods, and then there's cases where you're searching in, many years ago I was in a lot of the crack areas. Now it's meth, and I've been out in the middle of the woods and come across them making meth. Dangerous situations.
Yes.
You know, and I tell people there's things I do to protect myself. I do have a CCW, you know, which is, you know, I can carry a concealed weapon. I don't always have it on me. But there's certain places anymore I do where I it's known to have meth labs. But I've been in crack areas too and going through abandoned houses, and you'd be surprised what you find in there. There's a lot of situations you can get yourself into. While it might sound exciting and everyone's going, no, when someone might have a gun pointing at you.
You're a brave woman, that's for sure. Now, I know that, Gail, you often get asked to work abroad, and particularly you did quite a bit of work in Japan, didn't you?
Yes. I've spent quite a bit of time in Japan. I loved it. It's not somewhere I would want to live. Culturally very different from us, though I enjoyed it.
Okay. And how did that come about? Were you asked by the police in Japan to go and assist?
Well, I was first asked by Asahi TV, and they were saying basically the police have given up and the police are welcoming you to come here because they give up. And they asked if I would go, and I agreed. And so I went off to Japan, and we were able to locate the missing person. And it was just the mother. I got to say, there's no language barrier in that sense, because when I went to meet her before I found her daughter, you could just connect. You could feel. The words weren't important. And when we connected, it made it so much easier for me to locate her daughter.
Because you're connecting with the energy of the mother, and that builds the connection with the daughter in spirit, presumably.
Mm-hmm. It was phenomenal, and the things that I went through and learned.
And where did you find the daughter?
I described an area where irrigation or water came down into it on a hill, on a slope. And I said, maybe only 3 feet away is some type of blossoming tree, like cherry blossom, something, there's something there. Well, and it isn't that far away. And they asked me to take them on her path. So I went out the house, and as I walked out the door for her bedroom, I stopped, and tears just ran down my face, and I could hardly stop it. And I touched this tree, and it just almost passed out. And I said, what's wrong? Something's wrong here. And the interpreter looked at me, and she said, what do you feel? I feel horrendous pain and loss. She says, her brother hung himself by that tree.
Wow.
And we just continued, and I said, that night we crossed an area. I said, she crossed an area, and she went to her dad's burial place. And so he said, well, lead us to this. I led him to it. We walked for probably half mile, and he goes, you led us right to it. I went, just feeling her path, feeling where she went that night, getting her frame of mind, what was happening. And from there, it was just walking where she walked, feeling that pain that she was feeling at the time.
It's very moving. It's incredible how, you know, when we're sensitive to spirit, that we can feel so much. Can you tell us, Gail, a little bit more about your ability? Obviously, there are different ways of connecting with spirit. How does your connection with spirit work?
You know, I wish I could say I could put a label on that, because everything is different. Every case is different. What happens? A lot of times, I get things that come in like a TV sitting in front of me. And I can turn around and the TV's still in front of me. It doesn't matter what I do. I'm not one to dream things as much, though it does happen occasionally. But I say, and it's so important, this one thing I take students out to do, and I've never seen a student yet who said they didn't pick up on something. If you're walking through woods and you feel like you should touch, by all means, like psychometry, touch the trees. Feelings and emotions and things, like, how do I describe this? Like you would have cadaver scent that blows around in the woods from the body, so is those feelings and emotions that cling and touch other natural things. By all means, touch. Feel them. Sometimes you can feel the path at which where they even touched a tree physically, and you can feel these things. So that's why I like to take the students out with me to help them work through these things. But I can't say that my ability is hearing, seeing everything. And I never know when or what. I never know what to expect.
So, Gail, what do you do to switch off? Other than you said that when you've worked on a really intense case, you sleep. But
well,
it sounds like this is such intensive work. How do you switch off from this?
Sometimes it's hard. It really is. I have to use, then another thing I teach students is really, we're very physical people. Sometimes you just have to really revert back to that and see this physical switch and just see your hand going up and switching it off and saying, off, go off, off. No more thought on that. I need to take a break. I need to go, you know, lighten the mood up. And, you know, I'll go out and do something for fun or walk it off.
And what are you planning for the rest of this year, Gail? Have you got investigations already planned?
We do. It looks like right now in December we will be heading back to Texas. We cleared, working along with police, we were able to clear some areas on the Haley Dunn case, it was a very necessary thing to do. Is, you know, like we say in an area, it's nice to do the psychic thing and run over and say, okay, here, but the police need areas cleared. So in working with conjunction with them, we're going to say, you want this searched and cleared and wiped off the map as a cleared area. So we, you know, worked on that while we're in Texas, and now we're going back, and it looks like myself as well as five or six members of the team will be going back as well with their dogs to Texas. So this will really be good. We could have up to 11 cadaver dogs there.
And how do you train the cadaver dogs?
Well, as most of them start out as a pup. My one border collie, I got her at 8 weeks old, and I began training. And yes, you do have to train with human remains. And this is another thing why you have to have and study and understand bloodborne pathogens. You're working with human remains. So everything is handled very carefully with gloves, the whole, you know, there's a lot of training involved. But I took, and I had a special toy with my pup, and you're going to be building the foundation. And everybody knows if your foundation's bad at your house crumbles. Your foundation work is the most important work you're going to do with your puppy. And that is, you know, working with them to first understand the scent and what you want them to look for. And that you make it a game. With my pup, I made it a game. We, you know, I first put it and just move it away and say, where'd it go? And, you know, you don't worry about the behavior of sitting or indicating or doing an indication as much as the dog using its nose and knowing that you wanted to find that particular scent. So it's just something you continue to work through and get the dog to progress. Baby steps. Baby steps. You don't want to take your dog too far, too fast, or your foundation crumbles. Now, my second border collie, he was 9 months old, returned to the breeder. They said he was far too wild and had aggression issues, other issues. He didn't really, but border collies need to work. They need a job. And, you know, or you have to be a runner, or you have to do something active with them. And I trained him and took him for an evaluation. I had him 2 weeks. And he was already understanding scent within 2 weeks. And by watching his sister work, the sister I had at 8 weeks old, and I took him for an evaluation. The our team trainer said, very good. And I continued to build him just like I did her as a young dog, building that foundation, doing drive work and, you know, keeping him, you know, understanding what we're looking for until you can actually progress and move it into the woods.
And how much training does a dog need before it's actually able to do the work? So how long does it take to train the dog before you're actually able to take the dog away on a project?
Well, certification, I say most of the certifications, your dogs are anywhere from a year and a half to 3.5 years old, depending on the dog.
Okay.
Right now, our head trainer has an 18-month-old shepherd who's just now doing quite well going out into the woods with a little bit of help and not a large distance. You don't want to take any of your young dogs on a large search. You want to keep the area small and then build from there. Like, again, always baby steps with what you're doing with the dog. I have no doubt that by 2, this dog will certify and be an excellent dog.
And so when you're working with the dog, do you tune in to the location you want to take the dog to? And then do you let the dog off its leash and go?
So are you asking me if I cheat sometimes when I'm out on a search?
No, I'm just wondering, I'm just thinking of the process. Do you let the dog go off into the woods and look? And does the dog bark when it finds something? Or how does it work?
Well, some dogs do what is called a passive indication, which is a sit indication. Border collies work a little farther away than some of the other breeds. I like an aggressive indication. I like the dog to bark, so I teach mine to bark when they found it. But it's individual taste on that, of what you like or what you prefer from your dog. Now, there's a lot. See, here again, we get into this education. You have to study scent and what it does and how it moves, on whether it's cold or it's hot. Is it sucked down into the valleys, you know, because it's hot or cold? Is it rising up and catching on the leaves? You have to know all these things because placement of your dog is key. So you're checking wind, you carry powder with you, lighters, everything else, checking wind direction, doing things. Very technical work.
Yes, it is far more than I thought it would be. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's not just about taking your dog out there and going, okay, I'm going to let it loose and it's going to go. You know, it's key. Placement of your dog is key.
Yeah, and you do have to know about the direction of the wind, etc. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
Mm-hmm. And then The cold and the heat, and what does it do to scent? And do you have drop-offs? You may get your dog and see body language change with your dog, and that's so important, too. You have to know your dog body language. And you see the dog's body language change, but it's not able to locate the source. You need to move in and help the dog, and you have to be thinking, you know, where is the, what would the scent be doing this time of day? You know, I've got a 30-foot drop-off here, and it rises up to this, into the sun, or is it not sunny there? All these things you have to learn about the scent pools.
Incredible, Gail. You're an amazing woman, Gail. A real example to everybody. I want to ask you before we end the interview, how people can learn more about your work and the projects you're involved in.
Well, certainly they can go on my website, which is psychicgale.com, and check out things. Sometimes it's up to date, sometimes it's not. I'm so busy, I don't always have time to keep things up. But they can always shoot me email and ask questions. I don't mind, and let people know what I'm working on, what I'm doing. The book is coming out, so I've been really tied up with the book.
Excellent. When is the book being published?
Well, according to Llewellyn Publishing, Worldwide Publishing, they are saying not this October, but next October. Because it's the book is so detailed. There's so many cases in there and so many things. And we did have to change the names of some people to protect the innocent.
What will the book be called, Gail? Because I'm sure everybody listening will want to read it.
Blind Drive, which is the thing that I'm most famous for. And the blind drive is what I do on every case, where I start out just feeling and having the feelings take me to the area. I go to where the person was last known to have been and go from there and drive to where I feel they are.
Excellent. And we can see those clips on YouTube, can't we?
Yep, there should be a... and actually, if they go to my site under Breaking News, you'll see Aji Desir blind drive, which is the other Florida case, as well as the Anthony one is also on my site as well. And if they look up Nancy Grace clips, they'll see it on Nancy Grace. It's all over the internet.
Well, Gail, I want to thank you for joining us, but more importantly, thank you for the work you do.
Well, no one has to thank me, because I love doing it, and I really love helping these families. I can't ever say it's 100% closure, but I'd want to know where my loved one is rather than just missing. So it's a great passion and drive for me that keeps me going.
Well, we admire you. I'll take my hat off to you, Gail. I wish you lots of luck, and I'll definitely stay in touch. And it was an absolute honor to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, and thank you, Brenda, as well.
Thank you, Gail. Good luck.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Wow. What an amazing lady. I want to thank Gail for being with us. I know she's extremely busy, so for her to take the time to be with us is just incredible. An amazing woman. If you'd like more information about Gail, or if you'd like to contact her, you can visit her website, as she said. It's psychicgailstjohn.com. But you can also look at Gail's guest profile on the Psychic Access Talk Radio website. So that's psychicaccesstalkradio.com. And as you know, we have guest profiles for all of our guests there. So just look up Gail, and you can read a little bit more about her work. I'd like to take a few moments to make some announcements before we go into that part of the show when we interact and talk about the interview. I know it'll be extremely interesting. Be sure to stay tuned for the second half of the show to get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics. We'll announce the call-in number later in the show, so do be sure to have your pen and paper ready. And if you were unable to catch last week's show, you'll find a recorded archive link, as well as archives of all previous shows on psychicaccesstalkradio.com. Just look under the archives tab. And last week our show was with Charlene Hood, so it was a very interesting show. So do look that one up, and remember that you can download the shows in iTunes as well. And do feel free to circulate the archive links and future show details to your friends and family. We want to connect with as many people as possible, so do go ahead and share that link. And be sure to visit our website, psychicbloggers.com, where you can learn about all kinds of different topics in the realm of psychic work and the paranormal, psychic development, etc. And if you're interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the internet, go to psychicaccess.com. You'll find that all of our psychics are verified, accuracy tested, and they each offer their unique gifts. You can look through their profiles and find out more about them and choose the psychic that you feel is able to help you at the time. It's a great honor to be on the radio show and to work with Psychic Access and Doug. I know that Doug has very high expectations, and he does a wonderful job keeping us on track. All of the co-hosts here on Psychic Access Talk Radio .com are also with Psychic Access. So if you'd like a reading from one of us, please do visit us at psychicaccess.com. We'd love to hear from you. And we will be taking readings later in the show, but obviously we're only able to speak with a few minutes, or for a few minutes, I should say, with each person. So if you want to go into more depth, just contact us at psychicaccess.com. And if you're a site owner or webmaster, you can earn 50 cents a minute on traffic referred to psychicaccess.com. That's reading traffic. So if you'd like more details, please visit psychicaccess.com/webmasters. And again, if you like our show, please invite your friends to join us. Come along and participate in the chat room and listen to the psychic viewpoint. There's somebody for everybody. So help us to spread the word. We appreciate that, and we appreciate you being with us. Now, here's the number for a little later in the show if you'd like to call in for a reading. It's 724-444-4851. And when you do call in later on, remember that it's helpful if you're able to tell us your question straight away so that we can get focused on giving you insight. Well, Brenda, what did you think about that interview with Gail?
I was pretty blown away. I mean, that I've done a little bit of it. I'm sure you've done a little bit of it. And that is intense work. And to you know, do, you know, the conditions in which she has to work, it's very admirable. And needless to say, you know, the emotions that she must be going through, not only while she's finding, you know, she's searching, but also dealing with the families, you know?
Yes, it's really emotional work.
That's why, you know, and because we, as psychics, I mean, we don't like to give bad news, but we've got to give the truth. And so there's got to be some way of just conveying. And I like what she said. She just lays it out there, and she doesn't lay it out there in a mean way, but so that they can move on, you know? So.
Well, what I like is that she goes out of her way absolutely to help solve the problem as best she can, and to actually identify the remains so that the person can actually have a burial and the family can grieve properly and at least try to move forward.
Exactly. I mean, it's just you know, she comes on today, and last night I watched that movie, I don't know if you've ever seen it, called The Dead Girl, and it was about just this kind of stuff, about somebody who'd found a body and the whole bit like that. And it's like, I thought to myself, they could have thrown a psychic in there. It would have made it a little bit more interesting.
Yes.
You know?
So. I know, it would be. Now, you have you worked on a murder case as a psychic, Brenda?
I have. I actually worked on a murder case for 11 years because we tried to, the police had corrupted evidence in when they first came in and found the woman. And of course, I can't reveal anything about it because it's private stuff. But basically, it was a woman that they said suicided, but it was totally obvious that she didn't suicide. I was there the day it happened. They call me in, and they had just swept it under the rug because the woman had a prior drug, you know, related, you know, stuff. And so they said, oh, well, it's a suicide. Well, her mother would not accept that. And so it took her 11 years and us gathering information and going back to the police for them to change it from a suicide to an unsolved homicide. So it was pretty intense. It was intense. But yep. Her mother refused to give up. And I have a lot of admiration for that.
It's tragic, isn't it, that these things happen in the world?
It is, but you know, the interesting thing about her daughter is her daughter wanted to talk about it. She came through very clear and told us, gave us clues that when her mother went back to the police, they looked at her and said, "Where did you get this information?" You know? So it had a lot of pretty interesting twists over the years, I got to tell you. Yeah.
It's incredible how spirit can show us and guide us. There's an incredible TV show. It's produced, I think it's a co-production between a TV station in Australia and another one in New Zealand. Either that or it's produced in New Zealand, but it's called Sensing Murder. And that's a very interesting, very, very interesting program. Extremely evidential. You just cannot deny the evidence that's presented in that program. It's extremely interesting.
See, I like stuff like that. I like to see the proof of that because people always think, blah, blah, blah. But they don't know unless they're the one out there. And like she talked about walking out in the woods and stuff. And I worked on a missing person that we actually did go out in the woods, and we were searching, but we didn't have dogs. But it got pretty scary, let me tell you. We actually came upon the person that they found out later was the person who did it. So,
wow.
It was creepy. I mean, it was creepy. There was this guy, he was like, he had made this camp in the middle of like just these bushes and stuff, and you could just feel the negative evil energy when you walked right there. It was wild.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I want to ask you, Bobby, about your work, because I know that you were on you hosted a TV series investigating serial killers, right, Bobby?
Right, yeah. Investigating them, but more, it was more biography in the beginning, and then the second part of the show was more me and going to, well, I mean, throughout, you see what I mean? So in other words, the first part was biography, the second part was paranormal, but throughout it was stopping at these locations to see where these people grew up, and it was kind of my experience to see where it all went wrong. In other words, when did this person, you're kind of going in the past and seeing them as they were and as they were growing up in these places, and you kind of get that vibe and the feeling of who they were. And then at what point do things start to turn? What point do they start thinking about killing? In the example of Jeffrey Dahmer, he was killing small animals first when he was quite young. And that's when, you know, it just kind of triggered. That was like it was like behind this door of really wanting to murder people was just dormant, and then the murdering of the animals triggered that. Do you see what I mean? Like, it just, and then it just unlocked, and then it just kind of came forward. So yeah, it I mean, definitely it was disturbing in so many areas. You know, I can relate a lot to what she was talking about, when some of the feelings and things that go through your mind, you just can't, you know, you can't escape that. You can if you choose not to go in it, but if you're doing that for a living, you don't, I mean, there's a wanting to escape, but knowing that you can't. You know what I mean? Like, it's a choice, but you don't escape because that's what you're there for. That's what your job is.
Absolutely. What's the name of that TV series you were in, Bobby, if our listeners want to watch it?
It's called Conversations with a Serial Killer.
Conversations with a Serial Killer.
Yeah, some have been loaded up to YouTube. I know they were before, and then Virgin Media took it down. And I know some people, I've been getting notices that some people have been putting them back on YouTube. But it's really made the entire, every place but America circuit. It's been on Living TV. It's been on Sky One over in the UK. And then I still get letters from people who have seen the show from like South Africa or New Guinea, I had, and wow. Australia, just these really remote, you know, Iran, just places.
It's shown
like
in Iran.
Yeah, in Iraq. Yeah, it's shown all over. I was so surprised. So it was just very cool. So yeah, it's been all over. It's like, I'm like David Hasselhoff over there now. You know what I mean? It's never been shown over there. No, I'm just kidding.
Hopefully you're not going to, you know, eat a hamburger on the ground and, you know, shove French fries in your face.
No, I'm just going to wear a Speedo on my next investigation and run slowly across the meadow.
Oh, you need a bimbo then. You need a blonde bimbo.
We'll have to have a blonde person, yeah.
Wow. It's interesting. So interesting. It's always fun to work with you guys.
I agree. It's nice to come together. We're missing Maureen, and hopefully
I know. It's so bizarre. It's like there's a void without Maureen.
There is a void, isn't there? You can tell when somebody's not here from the show. There's a missing, you know, Steve, you've been gone a couple of times, and you really can tell. It's like we have to reach, if all of us were holding hands and that one piece is missing, we really have to reach to, you know, it's not just not a gap that's easily filled when one of us is gone, it seems. I like,
oh, how sweet.
Well,
He's such a sweet guy.
Well, I hope Maureen's feeling better.
Yeah, so do we. We should I don't know, pick a time or something and send some healing energy.
I'm going to send her a blingy. You know those blingies?
I do not. What the hell?
They're like,
what is a blingy?
It's an animated card that you can send on Facebook.
Oh, I was going to say, in Hollywood, we have bling bling, but I don't think that's the same.
Ah, that's interesting.
A blingy.
Blingy, yeah.
Blingy. Very
blingy
interesting.
Or blingy. I don't know. I might be saying it wrong, but.
You can send it if you don't know how to say it.
Well, Brenda.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an unusual question for you that you might not be expecting.
Okay, I'm ready. Go ahead.
Because we started the discussion at the beginning of the show saying that there is so much to learn when it comes to working with spirit and metaphysics. And I know that you're a very experienced tarot card reader, and that you use the crystal ball as well. I'm very interested in what you were saying about the crystal ball a show or two ago. How do you continue your spiritual and psychic development?
You know, I'm like you. I'm always reading. I'm always studying. I have, you know, I pick, you know, every year I have something that I want to go deeper into. And I like to stretch the limits of the things that are kind of, you know, could be on the edge or kind of a little controversial. And I love traditional tools. And when I worked on missing persons and even with the murder case, I used the crystal ball and the Ouija board.
Really? I want to ask you about the Ouija board, because I know we've had some interesting discussions about differing views on the Ouija board. I'm not sure if that's... Is that your mic that's making a noise, Brenda?
Is it... Can you hear it now?
No, I can't now. Like, I think okay. Your mic was maybe a little bit too close.
It could be.
Now, we've talked a little bit about the Ouija board in different shows, and I know that Maureen uses the Ouija board, and you obviously do. It's something that I've always steered away from. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences with that?
Well, the Ouija board is something that, and I start out every time I talk about the Ouija board, I tell people that you have to be very responsible and you have to know what you're doing if you're working with the Ouija board, because it is a tool that is very authentic, and you can buy it at Toys R Us. You know, that's the sad part about it, but it's definitely creates a doorway between this world and the next and the other dimensions. And so when you're using it, you have to protect yourself first. And I always do that before I do any Ouija session. But I have found that people who've passed over, or in the case of the girl that we worked with for 11 years, we would have regular Ouija sessions. She would give us clues. She would say names. It would come through very clear. Yeah.
And do you do that alone, or do you always do that within a group?
I've done it both. You know, I like to have, like, if we're going to go someplace and we're going to, like, a house that's haunted, we want to talk to the spirits there, we'll have a group, you know, and it'll be a seance setting. And if you can't fit two hands on there, you can fit a finger. And then we all kind of join in the moving of the placket. And people always go, oh, well, it's pushed, blah, blah, blah. But I've seen that thing jump right off the table and fly across the room.
I remember my mother telling me that she used a Ouija board when she was a girl. I think she was a teenager. And I think she did it with some friends and possibly my aunt. And they used a glass.
You can
and
use
the glass.
A glass.
It just lifted off the board and started spinning out of control around the room, and then it just shattered.
Uh-huh. The have old way of, that? Yeah, a wine glass. You can use a wine glass.
I wonder why it is then that it would break in that way, or that it would become uncontrollable.
The spirit energy becomes so intense, and what I often do when I do the Ouija board is I'll do table tipping along with it. And when the table starts to tip, the table can go completely vertical, and the Ouija board and the placket will stay on it. It won't fall off, almost like it's glued to it. It's amazing. It's very interesting to watch, actually.
It is interesting because it's physical phenomena.
It's physical phenomena. It's ectoplasm. And then sometimes ectoplasm will appear in those sessions. You won't see it when you're doing it, but if you take a photo afterwards, you'll see it looks like stuff coming out of your mouth, almost like a ghostly thing, you know what I mean? Or pennies will appear, which are a manifestation of ectoplasm.
Really?
Yeah.
So have you still got some of the pennies that appeared?
I have. I saved them.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's weird. It's like one... I mean, I like to put down a white cloth sometimes, because then the penny, when it comes up, it's like so obvious.
Like, you know, people... I don't. I'm like Steve. I don't do the whole Ouija board thing, but I would do one with you, Brenda.
Oh, you would have so much fun.
So much trust there. I would totally do one with you. And I've never said that about anybody, but I've heard you talking about it a couple times now. You know, Sunday when we were together and you were talking about it, and I like the energy that's around you when you were talking about it. Remember we had that discussion somebody had asked the question, and when you were talking about it, the energy that was around you. Now, I've always said that, you know, the Ouija board in the hands of the right person, I totally agree, it's just a tool. But this is the first time I've ever been really even tempted to, like, I would do that with her. You know what I mean? So
it's totally amazing. And
I bet you make it so.
Well, you know, it's one of those things, and that's like, I'm like Steve in many ways. I like to explore the edges of a lot of this stuff, almost into like the mysterious. See what I mean?
Yeah.
I find the whole domain of physical phenomena absolutely fascinating. I did some trance work, so deep trance, when you allow a spirit person to, in effect, speak through you. And that was just unbelievable, because you literally can feel your physical self changing. And I mean, it's not something I would suggest people just try, because it should be done with training. But when I've done that, I find it just incredible, because you can feel spirit drawing close. So, you know, Bobby, when you're doing mediumship, you get calling signs. So you may go hot or cold, but you can feel when the energy intensifies, when spirit are drawing really close to you in order to share information with you for a client.
Right.
And then when you go into trance, it just is that, but it really intensifies to the point where you can feel your physical face changing and your hands changing as they overshadow you. And I've even felt my throat changing. And then I've felt that I was very clearly standing to the left of myself. So my spirit was to the left of my physical body, but I still had some feelings of what was going on in my physical body as spirit took over. And then after a while, spirit will actually speak, and the voice is different. And even sometimes the language can be different. I haven't experienced a different language, but I know that that can happen. It's just incredible.
That's weird. I haven't had it happen to that degree. I've had it happen where, like, the last time that I was doing a workshop, and this was just, it wasn't even messages from a loved one. This was universe, right? Universe, spirit, and spirit guides, that type of thing. But the person said that they saw an overlay of a guide or whoever sitting where I was sitting. It was like an overlay of my face. They said that, like, they could see that my physical features were changed or changing or something. It was extraordinary. And I know what I feel when I, you know, because it is a slight trance state of sorts, but it wasn't, like I say, it wasn't somebody from the other side, not channeling to where my throat was changing, although I can hear the inflections and the intonations of their voice, and I can repeat those, but I don't think I've let go so much to be that person, or certainly not standing to the left of me and looking. Boy, that would be, I would be hard pressed, like, not to freak out for a moment and come back into my body real quick. So it takes a lot for you to notice that and not do anything and allow it to happen. So that's pretty good, Steve.
You know, it's interesting. It's very interesting. Well, we'll have to meet for that seance with Brenda sometime.
It will be awesome.
Be oh, all three of us. And then, yeah, well, Maureen, yeah.
Maureen will have to
Maureen
come
would
too.
Join
Holy
us.
Holy smokes. Can you imagine?
Because you all live in California, don't you?
Yes.
So you're all relatively near to each other.
Well, it's like an hour each way, I think. We're all an hour apart, I think it is.
Okay, so that's doable. So if next time I'm out there in LA, we could get together and do that.
Yeah, we definitely
yes,
need to.
Definitely.
That would be amazing.
Exciting. Really, really exciting. I'm trying to remember who's doing the show next week, actually.
I think it's me.
It's you. What have you got planned, Bobby?
It is a young lady named Karen No, and she talks about creating a type of heaven here on Earth. She, you know how you go through past life reviews? She's talking about going through that, past life reviews, this life reviews, and kind of unhinging or getting out and kind of working out some of the things that may keep us stuck. And so she, I think she also does some type of channeling and messages from loved ones, angels and things like that, of how to create that heaven on Earth here. So I'm kind of looking forward to speaking with her. I always like hearing it, and then it's people have so many different takes on the truth. You know what I mean? Like there's just the one truth, but so many people have their different takes. So I like to hear the different experiences with people.
It is interesting. If you think of all the shows we've done, we've covered so many different topics. I'm going to spend some time this weekend thinking about topics for shows and the remainder of this year.
Yeah, we've got, I just talked with her a couple of days ago, but we have Tara Sutphen that's going to be coming on the show, which I'm very much looking forward to. You know, her and her husband have been putting out meditation CDs and all kinds of stuff for the past, I don't even know how many years. But, you know, Tara, you know, Dick Sutphen.
Awesome. So, that's Tara, very exciting, actually.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I was really glad she said she would absolutely love to come on the show. So
I don't know about this, Bobby.
No, Dick and Tara Sutphen have been, I would say, leading in some of the sound therapy and meditation work that they did since early 70s, maybe even before then. But I remember when I first started kind of a spiritual journey in the early 80s, their CDs were such that I was listening to first. And they have so much material that, again, have been kind of leading edge with the work that they're doing. So, they're quite well known in the metaphysical world. Love it.
Excellent. Well, that sounds like a brilliant show.
Yeah, hopefully. That's not next week, but an upcoming show. We're pinpointing down some dates right now. But
that's
it should be
great.
Before the year out. Probably my next show, not my next show after this next one. So
that's great. I would like to get a Swami. I know it's kind of far out, but I know of one who has his own temple.
Hey, we're about far out. We're all about far out.
I think it would be interesting, their view. Because, the Indian religion is unbroken for 2,000 years, the Indian belief system from India. Pretty amazing.
There's a lot of energy around that, isn't there? Mm-hmm. I would more turn towards that energy than some of the other ones that have been created. And who's to say that it doesn't all kind of spring from the Indian religion and energy? And I don't know.
Exactly. I think there's a delineation between those belief systems that are based on universal truths and those that are created. And the ones that are like man-made or created tend to be the fear-based types. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, totally.
If you don't do this, we're going to go to hell.
Right.
If you don't do this, we're going to blah, 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 blah. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah, like most of them are just man-made, but it's when you get into the Indian part of that or Zen. I'm very Zen Buddhism and those that are just naturally just there, that have been there, not created. Love that.
Well, how would you describe your faith, Bobby?
It has come to be in just one truth. Very much of all just being one, and it seems like when there's information that comes out, there's just certain truths about why we do what we do and the people and your core, what your core base is, what your core true self is. And there's many, many different ways of putting it, like we talked about, but it all pretty much says the same thing. And so it's not any type of religion, certainly. I believe in Jesus. I believe that there was that person here that was incredibly wise, but I think it's up to debate as to who he was. I think just one of the very wise and put down here angel type, possibly. I mean, we get in some real touchy areas, don't we? But I do believe in Jesus as a person, and just like I believe in all the others, Muhammad and Allah and some of the other ones that have just all been been down here on Earth at one particular time. But I think I just believe in truth, no fear-based, all-inclusive truth, you know, if that makes sense. I know that may seem kind of broad, huh, isn't it?
No, I think it's quite typical of spiritualism, actually, Bobby, because I'm a spiritualist, and we believe in embracing all faiths, so no exclusion. It doesn't matter if you're a Catholic, a Buddhist, a Muslim, we embrace you and your faith, your belief in divinity. And I think that that's one, it's not officially a religion, I don't think, but I think that's one of the reasons why it's a beautiful faith. And people like you who do spiritual work and have very strong beliefs seem to naturally just fit into that group of spiritualists who believe in truth, believe in serving God or serving spirit, making a difference in the world, and doing so without making judgments or excluding people from certain other faiths.
It's really weird. I don't know where it developed from. I think because, you know, I grew up in a family that was fairly dysfunctional, you know, divorced parents at 13 and both alcoholics and things like that. They tried to get me to go to church and that didn't last very long. We just, you know, I think they wanted to because it was the right thing to do. Let's take them to church because that's what we should do. That's how we raise our kids. And, but then, you know, if you don't have that belief yourself, it's hard to continue doing that. You're just doing it because you think it's right. And then everybody kind of loses passion or motivation to do that after a while. And I have always remembered having this undying faith in whatever, something bigger than us. So it's hard to say where it's developed, just that the fact that it's always been there at my core, and I've just always known it. I've just always believed in it, even before I got into this work. And then, of course, it just has strengthened through doing the work, of course. But it's kind of weird, you know. You hear so many stories, like I say, of people who were brought up in some type of religion or base and then converted or brought up to focus on something, and then it translated or expanded into something else. So it's never seemed like I've been on one particular track until, you know, about 25 years ago when I started self-discovery, and then it just kind of became more and more clear, and it all started, like I say, with Zen and just that ultimate truth, I think. There's just no argument against that. Everything else just seemed man-made or seemed like rivers that were made from that, you know.
That's a great way of explaining it, because it's kind of like all paths do lead to the one truth. It's like what's comfortable for you. How do you, you know, some people need it in different, they need their belief system for in different ways, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and so many, like you said, it's so fear-based, isn't it? So many people have to say, this is like it is. And I've always shied away from that statement because it is like it is, but you can't, if you're trying to convince people of that, if you're trying to really try to get them and sway them to your opinion, then that's not it. Now it's just more control, isn't it? It's just more of trying to get people to believe what you believe so that you can go, okay, whew, there, now I've convinced that person, and then move on to the next person. That's so tiring. It's just, this is the way it is for me. I, you know, and you hopefully can get others to see that. If they don't, it is the way it is for them. You know, it just is the way it is for each individual. It's all relative. You know, it is for each person the way that it is. If you say religion is like this, then absolutely, right? Just like me. Or Steve, or even you, Brenda, but I mean, particularly like a psychic medium, we are just what we are. There's so many different opinions about who we are and what we do. That doesn't change who we are, though. Just like a cop can walk into a room and one person is glad to see him, the other person's not so much. It doesn't
change. Did you get that a lot when you were a cop?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But once you're like, hated all at the same time.
You kind of think like, okay, what did I do wrong?
Somebody's like, oh, crap. It was always a bag of mixed emotions, but it doesn't change the fact that you're there, you know. So just who we are, and opinions aren't required for us to do what we do. You can hate us or love us, but we still just do whatever it is that we do. So again, it's all relative on whatever you think.
It's interesting because I'm like you guys in that I always had beliefs at my core, really. And then in my teens, I found the spiritualist church, and it just so happened that the spiritualist belief system was the same as my innate belief system. And it sounds as though that's the case with you, Bobby, in that you just had beliefs. You just knew things.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's so difficult to explain that to people. You just know. It's like the Matrix, Kung Fu. I know Kung Fu. I don't know how I know it. You just do. And it's weird because I was watching friends and my family around me. My sister had gone through a religious period, and it seemed like everyone around me was always questioning their faith. They'd go to church every week or even on Wednesdays and all this and stuff. But yet it seemed like I had more faith of what was than they did, going every week and you know, trying to discover that. So yeah, it's good. I'm glad you had that.
Sometimes it's a rediscovery too. I mean, and it's like you're driven towards it, because I remember in my belief system that I knew, they tried to push me into Catholicism and that didn't work. Okay. So I just was very drawn to my own path, and I just kept on it until I mean, it's what I felt in my heart. Even though my dad used to say, "What are you doing?"
How many times did you get that as a kid? What the hell? What are you doing?
What are you? And his grandmother was the one who I kind of took after. So he must have known, okay? But they would still think, "What?" You know?
What meant to say to you both that we talked a little while ago about astrology a little, and we were talking about the square between Uranus and Pluto. Do you remember?
Yeah, that's scary stuff, really.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the second exact Uranus-Pluto square, bearing in mind that the planets are moving a little, they both move slowly, but they formed an exact square for the second time this year on the 18th of September, just a couple of days ago. And that was when it seemed there was this big military buildup in the Persian Gulf, and that the tensions seemed to become really strong, the tensions with Iran and the Western countries that fear Iran is developing a nuclear weapon. I found it interesting that all seemed to come to a head on that day of the exact square.
Well, I don't think it's interesting. I think it's just the way it is, because it's the macrocosmic connection. No, it's interesting because, you know, all of this, because it's amazing, but it's proof positive about astrology. I mean, the science, and I think astrology is a science. It's a metaphysical science. So
it is. It's definitely one of the scientific elements of metaphysics, and I like it because it is so precise. It's mathematical. It is scientific. They say it's the oldest science. That astrology is the oldest science.
I'd like to have
some more shows about astrology, actually.
I'd like one about Vedic astrology. I think Vedic astrology is very fascinating. You know, because the Vedic astrology is it goes in a circle instead of going outward like the Western astrology. It would make our signs a little bit different, you know.
Yes, I was speaking with a friend who's very into Vedic astrology. And it's interesting because they display the natal chart in the form of a cube,
mm-hmm.
rather than the zodiacal wheel that we use
exactly.
in Western astrology. And it actually would be very, very interesting to have a Vedic astrologer on
Wouldn't
the show.
It?
Well, that's something we should definitely do. I'll have a look who we could have, because that would be very interesting. I loved as well the show we did on Egypt. Do you remember the show on Egypt
mm-hmm.
a while ago, Brenda? I think that was one of yours, actually.
Yes, it was the Egyptologist. I'd like to do one on pyramidology. So I'm working on that right now. Just on pyramids, you know.
I'm reading a brilliant book by Drunvalo Melchizedek. Do you remember we had Phil Lang on the show and he mentioned Varlo Melchizedek, reading his book, the first book about the flower of life. And there's part of it in which he explains that there's a theory that the foot, or the paw, I should say, of the Sphinx, one of the two paws of the Sphinx, actually encloses the entrance to the Hall of Records, and that the Hall of Records contains evidence that other civilizations, or not civilizations, other life forms, intelligent life forms, have inhabited the Earth long before we were here.
Well, that is very fascinating, because in a lot of the, because there's two schools of Egyptology. There's the more esoteric Egyptologists that believe a lot of, and they actually go back and they refer to a lot of Herodotus and all of his work and the Hermes work, and they do talk about the entrance to the pyramids. Actually, you know, the initiates would enter through the paws of the Sphinx, and that's where they would undergo their first like challenge, or their what they had to overcome to go into the first pyramid. And each one of the pyramids are symbolic of, you know, you've got the pyramid of the physical body, the emotional body, and the spiritual body. And then the Grand Pyramid itself has three chambers where those are repeated. So the neophyte would have to go through each one, and they would undergo different trials in order to, you know, pass through the pyramids. And it's pretty fascinating.
It really is. I wish that we could just have somebody on the show that would tell us the whole story, that knew, and they could tell us exactly what it was all about. Wouldn't that be incredible?
That would be incredible. It'd be, and especially the way things are going now over there. I mean, I said to my husband, I go, I'm never going to get back to Egypt. Every time I plan a trip, it blows up. Something blows up over there. So, you know, and it's very worrisome, because those monuments are such a global treasure that for them to be, like, you know, destroyed would just be the worst tragedy that I can imagine ever. Seriously. They're not of this world, Steve. Some of them are just not of this world. I mean, the way that they explain, oh, yes, they rolled these things on milk and the oil. If you saw this, you'd say, look, you know, this can't even be lifted with a forklift, okay? It was put together in a way that we don't even have skills to do. Seriously.
How many times have you been?
I've been six times. I've done six tours of my own that I've led. But I was there for the first time as a child when I was 12. We had gone to Egypt, because I grew up in East Africa, and then we would travel every summer someplace, and we went there, and I saw the pyramid, and that did it for me when I was a kid. That was
I didn't realize you were raised in East Africa. I was reading, Brenda, about the Dogon tribe. Have you heard of the Dogon tribe?
No, it was Nairobi, Kenya that I was.
You were in Nairobi.
Yes.
Well, there's a tribe in Africa called the Dogon tribe, and they have drawings, extremely ancient drawings, inside caves, or inside a cave, of Sirius A and Sirius B, and also information about what is apparently Sirius C. And they have all kinds of mathematical information.
I have heard of that now that you mention it. And in Ethiopia, where we lived briefly in Addis Ababa and we lived in Asmara, they have cut from stone Egyptian temples there. They have some, because Ethiopia was conquered by Egypt at some point in the history. So there were monuments there too. It's pretty amazing. Cut from stone. It's amazing.
Wow. Well, the Dogon tribe basically had incredible astronomical information with exact precision, and it's only been verified in recent years as correct, as we've discovered scientifically more information about the heavens. but they had the information, and they claimed that the information was given to them by a species that came down in an aircraft, a UFO, and that landed near water, and that beings that seemed to be half dolphin-like came to the surface of the water.
Wow.
And gave them information. And Drunvalo Melchizedek, in his book, The Flower of Life, went to Latin America. And people in Latin America were describing the same thing, that these beings that seemed to be half human in some way and half fish or half dolphin arrived, landed in water, came to the surface, and gave them information.
And it's global, because there's one almost exactly like that happened in ancient Japan. And there's a lot of drawings about it too. The same thing. It landed in water and came out, and it was like fish-like.
Yes.
Do you know what's interesting about those types of things too? You're talking about a time when it all happened around the same time, and so there's no cross-pollination with the internet or a phone call or something like that. It's totally unique parts of the world, all of this happening around the same time, and exact descriptions of what everyone saw. That's very interesting. I love that.
Where are the aliens now?
That's what I'm asking every frickin' day, okay? I look up,
Well, have you heard this theory that we're at war, there's a galactic war, and there's a theory that the information that's circulated about naval presence off the coast of East Africa is potentially not about pirates, but about the fact that there's a huge international military presence there because a portal has opened up.
Oh, really? I haven't heard that. That's interesting.
I've heard that. I mean, it seems like a way out there theory to me. But there is a lot of information in the public domain about aliens and the fact that aliens have been here and been sighted. I have a friend that lives just near me. She said that she saw absolutely a UFO when she was a child, and her mother remembers the experience. And there are people, aren't there now, in the military that have come out in public and said, yes, there have been UFO sightings, there have been crashed aircraft, etc. It would be good to do a couple of shows on UFOs, actually.
I didn't know if you guys wanted to stretch.
We had a guy. Remember the guy that was Maureen's guest, and he was in the Air Force, and he was over there in Arizona. Remember he talked about the aliens and how there's hybrids, you know?
Yeah.
People like hybrid aliens. I don't know how that would work unless that's kind of like, that's pretty bizarre.
Have you heard of the inner earth theory? The theory that...
Explain it, but I don't know if that's... I may know it, but not have heard it by that.
No, name. What is that, Steve?
There's a theory that the aliens already inhabit the inner earth.
I believe it. Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's all kinds of I'm totally with. There's a guy by the name of Stephen Greer, and he right now top of his field in talking about disclosure, governmental disclosure, and the different people that he knows in the government talking about how yes, military has been working with them for years, and that they already inhabit these places, and just some crazy stuff that. I believe, you know, when I listen to him talk, there's a couple times when my BS meter goes off, but for the most part, about 97% of what he talks about, I really resonate with. And it's just scary stuff in some ways. In other ways, it's quite nice. You know, it's really kind of cool to think about. But again, yeah, I'm with Brenda. Where the heck are they? Come on.
Well, if they have all that advanced technology, actually, it would, maybe they don't want to reveal it to us. Look how volatile we are as a is a race.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because again, there is information in the public domain stating that particularly there were UFO sightings near to nuclear weapons, nuclear installations, and there was one facility that was actually shut down. The weapons were disarmed. Mm-hmm. I think it was on a ship, on a warship, and the UFO actually approached and all of the weapons were disarmed. And there are theories that extraterrestrials know that we have nuclear capability and they are concerned about what we might do with that capability and the impact it would have not only on our planet but on other parts of the universe and maybe beyond.
Right, the fallout could be in the universe as well, floating around in the universe for... Yeah, and with everything that's going on in the world, with there's this certain parts of the world wanting to like completely like go backwards. That's just kind of scary, you know? Very scary. So
it's exciting to imagine what we'll discover in our lifetimes.
Well, if you think about it, in the short period of time that it's taken, you know, just with like the technology, if it keeps going at that at this rate, but you know, by the time we have grandchildren or there'll be grandchildren in our lives, it's kind of, I mean, it's actually mind-boggling what the capabilities will probably be able to be, maybe colonizing another planet. I mean, Mars is fascinating. I mean, there's something about Mars. I think they're going to find some evidence of life there, like more than just like spores or bacteria. You know what I mean?
Well, there's a mission at the moment, isn't there?
There is.
Investigating Mars, because I follow the BBC website and I look at the BBC News app on my telephone, and there's often information about Mars, the exploration of Mars. So it's extremely interesting.
Well, they've taken those pictures, and I don't know if these are bogus or whatever, but from a distance, that look like pyramids and monuments and actually like some sort of structures there on Mars.
Yes. And if you go on the internet, you can see what appear to be structures on the surface of the moon.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a whole topic about moon bases and the reason why we went up there in the first place and the fact that we knew that there was something up there and to go to. And some of the most fascinating video that you can watch is on YouTube about the NASA files and pictures that have been taken from the shuttle and missions to Mars. Video, audio, all kinds of things that completely back up of the secret bases that are on the moon. Totally, all of which I believe in and subscribe to.
Secret bases?
Yeah, moon bases that they, you know, they use the moon as a hub. And there's all these bases that are currently there, but also some past relics of bases, and including pyramids that were built there as well.
That is so cool.
Oh, so cool.
Isn't that neat?
Well, it gets me excited because, you know, those are pretty hard to fake. You can't fake NASA stuff. The ones I really believe in is NASA files, you know, the video footage, the audio footage from NASA. And then, like I say, Dr. Stephen Greer. There's just, you really have to weed out of the billions of information there is about UFOs. And I've just come to really look at only, you know, a particular few that really get me excited. And that's one of them.
So you're fascinated by UFOs.
Huge fascination. Just huge. Almost to obsession. Obsession. It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah, every chance I get, I'm looking up. You know, I mean, it's just this. It seems like I go through phases. Like I went through a phase about a year and a half ago, and it really sent me into a paradigm shift about what we do with the psychicness and the mediumship and things like that. And then that all turned around. And then there was a lull, and then it picks back up, you know, and I'm watching all kinds of UFO footage and I'm in it, and then I'll take a break. And right now I'm back into the passion of it, and it hasn't taken a break like it normally does. I'm waiting, you know. I certainly don't sit out there in my lawn chair with a bag of donuts and my binoculars, but it's,
do you eat donuts? What's your favorite donut?
I like Krispy Kremes, man.
Oh,
you give me a Krispy Kreme and I'm yours. Oh my God, I love them.
Donuts. Well, it's been a great show, and I want to thank Gail again for joining us because she's incredible. And so next week, your show, Bobby, again, can you just remind us what you've got planned?
Yes, her name is Karen Noe, it's Noe. I apologize. I actually have a friend who spells her name the same way, and the last name is Noe, but this is Noe. Anyway, she'll be on the show talking about your past life review, this life review, going through a review of your life to try to create a heaven here on earth. And hopefully we'll get some really practical tips. I know after tonight, Doug will put her information on our show page, our guest page, and you can read all about her. And there's some videos that will be accessible as well. And you can find out more about next week's show. But I'm looking forward to speaking with her. It should be interesting.
Great. Well, we'll look forward to that, Bobby. Well, thank you to both of you for being here tonight. I want to say good night, and over to you, Bobby and Brenda, to say your goodbyes.
Bye-bye. Till next week.
You have a great week.
Hello. My name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.